You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good. Welcome back to another edition of the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. My name is Blair Angulo. I hope everyone had a great holiday weekend. It is the spring and we are going into official visits. Apparently, it sounds like the dead period will be lifted to begin June. So we've got a lot of content over at 24/7 Sports. We've got Kamari Rogers announcing a top six. You want to get the inside scoop there from Steve Wiltfong. Make sure you check out 24/7 Sports. Got a lot of other stuff going on, camp seasons, showcases, events, Elite 11. And we've got Bud Elliott, national recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports, on the line to discuss a lot of the stuff that's going on right now and a lot of the stuff that isn't happening right now. Bud, how are we doing?
Blair, what's going on, man? Early morning for you on the West Coast.
It is. But when Bud Elliott comes calling, you know, you got to pick up and you got to hop on the podcast line. So thank you for hopping on the line with us this week to kick off this week. And we've got a couple topics to discuss. Let's start with the stuff that isn't happening. So the 2023 class, just over a dozen prospects have committed. And everyone might wonder, is that low? Is that kind of normal? You know, obviously there hasn't been visits. So this group, which at this moment are sophomores or at the end of their sophomore year academically, those guys haven't had the full recruiting experience that the other classes have had ahead of them, at least up to this point. And so to only have 15 prospects in that class committed right now, that would seem a bit low.
Yeah, I initially thought, okay, this is pretty low. We just dropped our 2023 class recruiting rankings, and I know in the, was it the recruiting meeting or the group text, we said, hey, Steve, are you going to write where the top uncommitted players in the class of 2023 are leaning? And Steve's response was, well, they're basically all uncommitted, right? And so it kind of got me wondering, and I wrote this on Friday on 24/7 Sports, like how low is 15 for, you know, the class of 2023 compared to prior years? So you got to really look back a couple of years here, because you remember these guys are just finishing up, you know, their sophomore seasons, that their sophomore years, they're rising juniors at this point. So honestly, the class of 2019 at this time, they only had 10. Class of 2021 only had 14. Class of 2022, only 7. So we're actually not far behind on 2023. And Blair, this kind of gives me hope that I think 2023 might be the real class where we get back to sort of a normal cycle. Like 22, we're happy we're going to get visits, as you just said. There's going to be a little more normalcy in the 22 class, but they're still behind from an evaluation standpoint because they didn't get to see these guys at camp last summer, really at all. I mean, they're looking at the same stuff that we're looking at, as opposed to getting these guys on their own campuses, putting them through the paces and their own drills. 2023, though, I think is the real class that's going to get back to a normal recruiting type cycle.
We're joined by Bud Elliott. He's a college football recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. Now, whenever we have you on the podcast, I know it's going to be a deep thinking podcast and we're going to go kind of layers and layers into things. And one thing that I think really has affected the recruiting numbers, and I guess the perception of it, is because for the 2022 class, the numbers have been a bit low up to this point as well. And in terms of what we think a recruit and kind of their timeline goes in, we just know that the 2023 group is going to be one that has to look at available scholarships, right? The 2022 class, a lot of these guys have to jump on an offer right now because of the scholarship numbers, the restrictions, the number that a specific school will be at, given the super seniors, given the guys that are coming back, given the red shirts and all that. I think the 2023s now look at an opportunity, and you know, maybe everyone is still waiting until they get more offers before they commit. There's been no camps. There's been no showcases on campus for these recruits to go and prove themselves in front of coaches. There's also been no coaches evaluating in person, unless they have a son or, you know, a family member that they're going out to see at a camp and they get to see other players at that same event. You know, I know they're not going to be looking the other way, but there hasn't been that level of in-depth analysis when these offers are going out. So with no offers going out, it's kind of tough for some of these guys to come off the board as well.
Exactly right. And a lot of these schools really just don't feel the need to rush. I mean, they're going to extend offers to the players about whom they feel are no doubt studs, right? But some of these offers being extended are sort of the non-committable offers, or the, hey, this is committable if you come to our camp, or if you come to our campus and we eyeball you, we talk to you, we think you're an actual fit for our program in person. I mean, most of these relationships, or all of them at this point, I guess for the most part, have been built over Zoom. So we are a little bit behind in the 2022 pacing, which is interesting. You know, last year's 2021 pacing, kids were committing left and right because they were worried that, like, they were never going to go visit campuses, and they basically wanted to hold their spots. And they, a lot of them committed to places they had never visited, many more so than we normally have. I really thought we were going to have a huge decommitment season once visits opened up, which, you know, you said deep thinking, but I didn't think deep enough there, right? Because visits never opened up. So, like, we are a little bit behind in 22. I think we will see a pretty big explosion with 2022 commits over the summer, if I had to look. I mean, we only have, what, five schools with Rutgers now, six Cincinnati, excuse me, I'm just scrolling down our list, you know, that have double-digit commitments. I think, you know, by the end of summer, that number will probably double, if not triple. We'll have a lot of schools that have double-digit commits. They'll have had kids on their campus in some form or fashion. And, I mean, they might be able to get off campus a little bit and do some recruiting as well and do some evaluation.
We released the top 24/7 for the 2023 class, like you mentioned earlier, last week on Wednesday. If you want to check out all the content, that's still up on 24/7 Sports. And obviously the rankings are available as well. I think a lot of coaches and a lot of recruiters are hesitant at the moment because there's no need to rush on this class, on the 2023 group. You know, in 2021, when we were in the heat of the pandemic and, you know, obviously there wasn't a lot of activity, I think they could trust the 2 or 3 years of film that had already been established, right? Or trusted a prior evaluation when they saw the player as a sophomore or as a junior. The 2022 group, we're seeing it now. That's the one we're living in currently. There's been no in-person contact with these players for quite a while. I mean, it's been over a year since anyone must have seen someone either on campus or, you know, at a game or during the fall of their freshman season. So these are players that haven't really established that connection with coaches. So we would expect the numbers there to be a bit low. How do you think the summer could go for the 2023 class in terms of an explosion? Do you feel like maybe we'll see more commitments than we see ever before because kids have been kind of, you know, in a way chained up, right? They haven't been able to get out and go and be free and go see some of these schools. And do you feel like maybe it's kind of like unleashing a kid in a candy store and telling them to get whatever he wants?
I think you're exactly right about that. I mean, think about how excited you were to go out and see a camp once we were finally able to, you know, to do so with some of the travel restrictions lifted. Rather, these kids have been locked up, like you said, unable to go out and take visits to schools, or at least unable to go out and meet these coaches. I mean, it's pretty rare that you talk to a kid at these camps and he's like, yeah, I've been to this school and I met their coaches. I'm like, wait, when? He's like, oh, it was after my freshman season. I was like, oh, okay. Is that the staff? Like, is that staff even still there? Like, you know, there's a lot of coaching turnover. Like, yeah, a couple of them are. I'm like, all right, cool. You know, so I think you will probably see a lot of kids who get caught up in the moment and make some summer decisions really based on the first or second place they visit or when they take their first bus trip. And that's fine, right? Like, schools throw out all these offers. They have to, you know, be somewhat willing to take some of these commits, even if it is pretty early. And Blair, I think one of the main factors that we'll see going forward as to how many commits schools push for is the roster limitations. We actually don't have a ruling yet from the NCAA because the schools haven't really voted on this as to will the super seniors that get to come back, because everybody who was on a roster in 2020, they got that free COVID year, basically. So if you were a senior in 2020, if you want to come back, you're still a senior in 2021. Now, in 2021, you know, for this year, you don't count against the 85 cap if you're one of those super seniors. So schools can technically carry, you know, 85 scholarships plus however many super seniors you have. So I think some schools have like 12 kids back. So they're carrying like 85 plus 12. That's 97 scholarships. But we don't actually have a ruling as to whether those super seniors in future years, so the kids who want to come back in 22 as super seniors, or the kids who want to come back in 23 as super seniors. We don't actually have a ruling on that if they will count against the 85. Because if they count against the 85, we have a big-time scholarship crunch coming. If they don't, then I think you're going to see schools greenlight a lot more kids. A lot of schools are a little bit reluctant to greenlight a whole bunch of commitments right now simply because they don't want to have to, you know, essentially cut or force decommits from a lot of these kids later on down the road because they don't know.
I feel like this is maybe a discussion for another podcast, but I think the discrepancy there is what's to say that a sophomore season is less important than a senior season, right? So I think there's a lot of ramifications there if you designate, oh, you know, the 2020 season was your sophomore year. You know, we know it's kind of important, but it's not as important as it would be if you were a senior, right? So I think if I had to make an argument, I would be on the side of all the years count the same. If you're a freshman, you could have made just as big of an impact and maybe raised your NFL stock just as much as if you would have been a senior. You know, how can you really maybe designate that and say it's not important? And to give some of these other players an extra year is a bit unfair if everyone was on campus dealing with the same circumstances. So maybe that's the holdup. Maybe that's why a lot of colleges right now and coaches are you know, being a little hesitant and being a little, I want to say maybe a little kind of conservative with the offers that are going out, not knowing what like you said, the roster numbers are going to look like. So a lot of very interesting stuff there. You can check out the content piece, the content item from Bud Elliott over at 24/7 Sports. It is on the website this week.
Blair, one thing, if I could, I think a lot of this, I mean, I agree with you, man. Like, they should not count against the cap. The school should be able to go above and beyond if they want. But I think what people have to remember is, like, every school, their vote counts the same. So, you know, Alabama, North Carolina, like the schools that have plenty of money and could want to carry, you know, 100 guys if they wanted to, their vote counts the same as, I don't want to pick on some random G5, but like a lot of these group of five schools that are having to furlough employees and, you know, are telling their coaches already for this year, hey, look, like, yeah, I know those kids don't count against the NCAA's cap, but they count against our cap because we have our own budget for scholarships and like we don't have the money to pay for, you know, 95 scholarships, right? We're going to cap you at 85. So I think a lot of these schools will hope that the NCAA, you know, via the school's votes, will say, hey, look, it's 85 flat. You got a 1 year freebie for 2021, but in future years, you know about this, you can plan for this, et cetera. And if they do cap that, who really gets hurt is a lot of these high schoolers who are going to have to go down a level. You know, whether it's P5 to G5 or, you know, maybe a couple of G5 kids having to play D1AA or, you know, FCS or go the JUCO route.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I feel like we're going to see an elevated level of play in some of these players. And then our rankings are not going to be as accurate as they have been in years past. So that's going to be another byproduct with some G5 players getting drafted and us getting yelled at on the message boards. We'll be back more with Bud Elliott here on the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Masters Week, and that means CBS Sports HQ is your home for round-the-clock coverage from Augusta. That includes tournament picks, round-by-round matchups, highlights, leaderboard updates, and we even have our pal from the First Cut podcast, Kyle Porter, on site providing up-to-the-minute updates, so you'll know everything there is to know from Augusta. If you're wondering what CBS Sports HQ is, it's our 24/7, 365 days a year sports news network. How do you get it? It's easy. It's free. Just go to CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports mobile app, or fire up the CBS Sports app on your connected TV and watch yourself become the most in-the-know sports fan on your group text. Bud, you're a golf guy. How's Masters Week kicking off for you?
It's going to be pretty awesome, man. I'm excited about that. We're actually, come my buddies, we're going to have a Masters draft on Wednesday night. Each pick a certain number of guys and run a little pool and basically get the best scores out of the guys who make the cut. It should be pretty fun.
How does a Masters draft work? Because I've done a March Madness draft, and we don't really do brackets anymore. We do a draft, and we draft teams 1 through 64. There's 8 of us, and you have to kind of make sure that you don't get the same teams in the same side of the region. But how does a Masters draft work?
So what we're doing is we have 5 guys. We're each going to pick 12 dudes, and then it's the combined score of your top 7, right?
Yes.
So we don't want to penalize you if somebody withdraws we're going to take your top 7 scores. If you don't have 7 guys make the cut, then the best score of the guy who missed the cut is doubled so he can have a 72 hole score, So it kind of penalizes you, but doesn't totally knock you out. It should be pretty cool. And then tiebreak is the highest finisher, I guess.
That's awesome. I like that. Well, I have to kind of integrate that into, a couple group chats that I'm in. So make sure you have the CBS Sports app for all the latest on Masters and this big week over at CBS Sports. But you've also got another content piece that you're working on over at 24/7 Sports. And that has to do with tying in records and winning and recruiting success. A lot of fans on the message boards, especially on Twitter, social media platforms, they want to know how big is winning in recruiting? How much does it matter to recruits? And I think everyone has a misconception that if we win this game, we're going to get that recruit because he's choosing between this school and that and the school we're playing, right? And a lot of the times that's not the case. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into it. But when you look at the grand scheme of things and the overall winning culture that maybe a program has, there is some close ties there with recruiting success as well.
Yeah. So I took and I just pulled every top 25 class in the early signing period era. And I think that's an important distinction there, because the early signing period has really changed some stuff, right? It's made it a lot tougher for the brand new coach who gets hired and only has 2 weeks to call up his current commits and then make some phone calls to the kids he wants to try to flip or convince him to hold off to the traditional February National Signing Day. And so I just kind of ran some numbers on this, and I did find some interesting trends and then some pretty cool outliers. So number one is you really cannot finesse your way into a top 2 class. There's only been 3 teams that have signed a top 2 class in the ESP era, and that's Georgia, Bama, and Ohio State. And all of those teams won at least 11 games before their bowl, with the exception of the 2020 Bama class in 2019. Bama, a lot of guys got hurt. They went 10-2 before the bowl game. But still, if you want to sign a top 2 class, you need to basically win 11 plus games before the bowl, which obviously I say before the bowl because what happens before the bowl? Early signing period. So what you do in a bowl game doesn't matter at all to recruiting now. It used to actually matter a little bit. If you balled out in your bowl and you looked awesome, you had a lot of positive momentum for the next year. We know 85% of kids are signing early. Their signatures dry before you even start bowl practice.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you win your bowl. I think it matters which bowl you got into.
Yeah, agreed. That's a great point. Also, no surprise here, Blair, all those teams that won 11 plus games, they were also ranked going into the early signing period in the college football playoff ranking. So you do need to basically have a pretty relevant season if you want to finish top 2. But top 2 is a pretty narrow goal for most teams. And so I expanded. It's all right, what if you want to have classic kind of that 3-10 range? And this got really interesting. The parameters for what you could do in this range, it exploded, man. So normally you need to win 9 games before your bowl if you want to sign a top 10 level class. But that's only if you kind of have an established coach. And I think that's something you and I should talk about, because what I'm seeing here is that you can actually get a top 10 class winning only like 7 games if you have a new coach. You're sort of in that bump class period, that grace period, where it's not really about your product on the field. It's more about the vision you can sell and the hope and the hype, you know. And here's what I see you doing for me in this program. You really haven't had to have those proof of concept years. I mean, you know, Texas 2018, 2019 Texas, 2019 A&M, 2019 LSU all had really good classes in those years, despite the fact that the prior year they really weren't great on the field. You know, like that's something to keep in mind here. So you do see programs finish top 10 with like a 7-5 record before the bowl game. That's pretty crazy, but it's almost always when you have a brand new coach who's selling his program.
Well, here's one that was outside the top 10, and this is a pretty good example of kind of what you're discussing here. LSU in 2018 with Ed Orgeron in his first year at that time, they ranked 15th nationally in the composite team recruiting rankings, had only 9 wins pre-bowl, but they've been on the up ever since then. So LSU finished in the 2019 class 5th in the composite. The year later, they were 4th in the composite. In this last previous 2021 recruiting cycle, they finished 3rd in the composite. So they keep going up and up. Obviously, that's a byproduct of them winning a national championship, having all the NFL success that they've had. And so maybe that's one school to look for, pushing for, or maybe a breakthrough of sorts, right? To get into that top 2 and try to get into elite company.
I definitely think so. You know, the one thing you don't see here is you don't see schools with like established head coaches at that school. So coaches, you know, that have coached 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons or more at the school, you don't see them signing top 10 classes when they just came off years in which they won, you know, 7 or 8 games. And I think the reason for that is sort of intuitive, right? If you are in year 4 or year 5 or year 6 at a program or longer, and you only win 7 games, you go 7-5 pre-bowl, you're probably going to have some job security questions. These kids have heard your message about what you're selling, what you want that vision for your program to be, and yet it's not actually realizing itself on the field. Now, there are some exceptions to that. Like if you just won a national title and you're in a pandemic year, I mean, 2021 LSU class, you know, finished top 3. And if you prorated their wins and kind of looked at what their non-conference was, they were probably still like a 7-5 level team. You know, but that's pretty rare. And they just came off a national title. So most schools don't have that exception. But yeah, like there's sort of that kind of prove it year. And I think it used to sort of be year 2, year 3. But in the early signing period here, I think it may be worth discussing whether we should sort of have that proof of concept year, maybe a year back. Maybe it's not year 2, year 3. Maybe it's year 3, year 4.
I think so too. And I think, you know, typically when college coaches get judged by their ADs or their school presidents, and they're trying to figure out if they're going to keep them after that 3rd year, right? Because I think everyone now assumes and realizes that you only get a couple, maybe 3 or 4 years to really turn a program around. I think with that pandemic year, it's going to maybe push it back another year. And it's also going to allow for that coach to make a stronger push for recruits to say, hey, we have a little extra time. We're doing this the right way. We're turning things around. And you know, so my question for you is, how big do you think this season could be for some of these prospects? Because I think everyone realizes that 2020 wasn't, maybe a real year in terms of having, you know, fans in the stands at certain stadiums, right? And maybe the circumstances weren't correct with a lot of opt-outs. So the roster makeup, the teams weren't the real teams that we would typically see. I mean, just look at Oregon, right? Oregon made it to the Rose Bowl, won a Pac-12 championship game. They unfortunately were without their best offensive player, which was Penei Sewell, who's going to be a top 10 NFL draft pick. So how good could they have been had they had their best offensive player, you know, even after losing a Justin Herbert? So I think all of that goes into a recruiting pitch when coaches are trying to sell a program. But how important could this 2021 season be with winning and recruiting success?
I think it's really important, Blair, because if you had a bad year last year, I think you are naturally going to want to downplay that bad year and largely blame it on the pandemic. And I don't think that's necessarily excuse making. I mean, there were a lot of really weird circumstances last year, especially where you are out west. I mean, you had schools not practicing the whole week, and then they play a game. Some schools played only 4 games, I think it was, right? What did Washington play, 4?
They had a few games just completely canceled.
So I think if you have a good year this year and you had a bad year last year, I think you, hell, take a team like LSU, right? They go national title and then they win, what, 3-4 games last year, I think it was. If they come out and ball this year on the field, if I'm at Orgeron, I'm saying, look, you know, look, guys, I don't want to do the Coach O voice, I guess. I'm not going to do it. You know, but like he's going to say, look, we went national title, crazy pandemic year that was insane for everybody. And we lost like our entire roster, or at least our starting lineup. 2021, we're right back at it, right? We're back at an elite level. If they do that, I think their recruiting is going to just be sky high, because that's a pretty easy narrative to sell, you know, to recruits. I also wonder, you know, are there teams out there who had a really nice 2020? And then if they kind of flop this year, people might say, I don't know, man, like how much should we really trust those 2020 rankings? I don't know if recruits will look into that much, but I definitely think the opposite, like the LSU example, is one we can point to. I think that's a really important year for them, especially.
Yeah. And Bud, before we let you go, I think the other part of the equation too, with the transfer portal, right? And transfer success, if you are able to sell and have kind of a really good system going, you're going to be able to attract better transfers, you know. Prospects are going to be more susceptible to hopping from one situation to that better situation, or to that opportunity that might allow them to take that next step in their development, to have a better chance of playing in the NFL, to have a bigger chance of playing time. I think all of that is really important. So if you're factoring recruiting success with the opportunity to also draw some more mature talent, some prospects that are already, you know, kind of knowing what college is like and have that experience, I think that could lead to you even being a bigger mainstay, because then you're getting players that are ready to contribute right away.
I don't think there's any doubt. And this is sort of, I would say, analogous to, like, think about baseball. There are certain teams in baseball where if there's something that you do well, you're going to go to that team because they maximize, you know, what you do.
Do you see a lot of pitches? Because I got a great team for you.
Exactly. Right. Oh, man. I mean, like, you know, think about your Dodgers guy, right?
I am a Dodgers guy. I just don't like to flaunt it because, you know, we've got a lot of shiny things in our life right now.
Yeah. The Dodgers are my NL team. I adopted them when I'm a Rays guy, but I was like, all right, can I have an NL team?
Oh, so you were completely torn in October.
No, I wasn't torn. I was like, I'll root for the Dodgers when they're not, you know, like if they're just playing on a random thing. And I liked listening to Vin Scully back when he was still doing it, but I just thought it was cool. I wanted to see the Rays approach with money. You know, I was like, all right, so you're going to take the Rays like strategy and philosophy, but actually be able to spend. That's kind of cool. And you know, when they took the Rays GM, Friedman, back in the day, you know, that was pretty cool to see, you know, see them do that as far as, you know, their plan coming together. But like, I think to your point on the transfers kind of brings all the way back around. And if you are a school that is established, you do well with transfers, like maybe Oklahoma with transfer quarterbacks, right? Now they're not trying to build via the transfer portal. They're trying to, you know, do a good job in quarterback recruiting. And I think they are doing a good job, obviously. But if you're a school like that, or honestly, any of the in-state schools so far in Florida that have had a lot of success with transfers in recent years, those schools, I think are schools that can benefit if they can set up that track record of, hey, like, if you're a transfer, you also care about stuff like, are you going to get an even shot at this starting job? They're bringing me in, but is he going to be biased towards the guy he actually recruited? What does the position coach think of me? I think if you establish that you are good with transfers, it can definitely help you be better, you know, with transfers.
Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff there. You could check it over at 24/7 Sports from Bud Elliott this week. Bud, it's been a pleasure, and please don't burn your Blake Snell jersey.
Oh, man. I can't believe he did that.
All right, so that is Bud Elliott. You can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. We'll be back later this week.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Magical! Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds. Magnificent! And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.